Hello, everyone. My name is Jennifer Marsman, and for the next hour, we're going to talk about the cognitive services. Now, just to level set a little bit, how many people in this room have heard of the cognitive services before today? Nice. Cool. How many people have actually written some or downloaded a demo and looked at a sample or two? Nice. Awesome. How many people have written their own code with the cognitive services? Nice. Okay, so we have a few. Awesome. Very cool. All right. So I'm really excited. I know there'll be kind of a wide variety of knowledge levels and such with the cognitive services, and there's so many different ways you can attack it. So what I'm going to try to do is give you a sense for what they are, what scenarios they can enable, and then dive into a little bit of code here and there too. And the cognitive services are so huge, I won't be able to touch all of them, but I'm going to try to pick and choose and surface some cool ones. So hopefully everyone will walk away learning something. All right, so what are the cognitive services all about? At the end of the day, the purpose behind the cognitive services is to democratize artificial intelligence. So we were thinking about kind of all of these things that we had been building internally with Microsoft Research. We've done things in the field of vision and created neat models that could take pictures and measure emotion and could do nice face detection and things like that that previously were like these lofty dreams of artificial intelligence and now are pretty much solved problems. We've done a lot of things in the speech domain as well, so text-to-speech, speech-to-text, and even things like being able to identify a certain speaker out of a group of speakers. We've also done a lot in terms of language processing, text analytics, that sort of thing. Working with rich knowledge graphs to be able to do some really neat things. And then also some search APIs powered by Bing to be able to do some really amazing things hitting the internet and leveraging that rich source of knowledge. So with all these cognitive services that we had been developing internally, at some point someone said, hey, we have all these neat models that have been kind of built and curated by Microsoft Research. We should make that a product. We should kind of share that with the world. So that's kind of how the cognitive services were born. And there are over 20 different sets of APIs within the cognitive services. And I have them kind of categorized into 5 categories right there. But within each of those 5 categories, there's even more APIs. And then within each of those APIs, there's even more methods and functions and functionality in there. So there's a lot of cool things to play with that we can see. So that's just a very quick look at the what, and we're going to dive a little deeper into that in just a second. But first, I want to take a step back and talk about how do cognitive services fit into the broader picture here. I'm assuming that everyone in this room is very interested in machine learning and data science. That's the reason you're here. And Microsoft has a kind of a wide breadth of offerings in this space. We have everything from the CNTK, which you guys may have heard about. There's going to be a talk on that tomorrow. And the CNTK is our deep learning toolkit that's available, open sourced, and crazy performance on multiple GPUs. Really, really neat stuff it can do there. So that's kind of one option. And then there's another option if you want to build your own models and be able to do it in a really easy deploy way using kind of a web-based browser where you can drag and drop and create a data flow and build and train and test and easily deploy models, then Azure Machine Learning is a really great option there. And you can integrate Python and R that you may already be doing in your roles as data scientists into that as well. And then there's the cognitive services. So just in terms of kind of where they fit in the spectrum, I think that cognitive services are just they're the absolute simplest to use. They're amazingly easy to use. It's simply an API call. And what you're doing is making an API call to a REST endpoint and hitting a model that someone else has already trained and getting a response back. So super, super easy. If I wanted to do facial detection, I send an image, I get back. Here's the bounding box of where the face is in this image. And a lot of other data as well, which we'll dive into in just a second. So very, very easy and simple to utilize. Another thing I really love about the cognitive services is just the sheer flexibility. Because we're dealing with this is just REST, right? Just calling a REST endpoint, you can really leverage any language and any platform you want. And so we actually have, I'll jump over to the SDK page in a second just to show you, but we actually have a lot of client-side wrappers where we've wrapped those REST calls for you and made it just nice, easy, simple SDK calls. So we have those available for Android and for iOS and for Windows and C#, and there's even Python, Jupyter notebooks out there that have things wired up already. So there's a lot of resources and SDKs already there for you to be able to call these as well. And then finally, they're tested. So again, this was research done by Microsoft Research and the Bing team and the data scientist team in Azure Machine Learning. And so just being able to leverage some of that stuff can be nice when you don't want to reinvent the wheel. And then the other thing that's cool about it is a lot of the work that's been done to enable these services has been published in academic research papers by Microsoft Research. So if you want to dig a little deeper and see, okay, how did they actually do that under the covers, there's a lot of great research papers that are really fun to look through and see some of the neat things that are surfaced in there. And then in addition to that, there's very good documentation. I'll kind of show you some of the cool things that are surfaced in the documentation a little bit later. And then we have sample code on GitHub, a lot of samples and SDKs to get you started. And then wonderful community support. So we're trying to actively monitor Stack Overflow and the MSDN forums. And then we have a great tool known as User Voice. How many people know about User Voice? Okay, oh, User Voice is a great, awesome resource, you guys. So what's awesome about User Voice is that's the way you can get feedback back to the product team. So it's cognitive.uservoice.com. And if you go there and you see one of these services that you really love today, but you're like, oh, I really wish they offered that in Portuguese. Why don't they have this service to be able to work with Lewis in Portuguese yet? And so what you can do is actually say, look for that, first search for the feature, see if it's in there. If somebody else has already put it in there, upvote it, so that gives it more strength. And then otherwise, add a new feature request, and we're actively looking at those and trying to do the right thing for our customer and balance that. So, but that feedback is absolutely looked at and taken very, very seriously. It's also nice because you can kind of see the roadmap. You can see what things are in development, what things are being discussed. So you can kind of see some good stuff in there too. Okay, so now let's talk about some of the scenarios. So what kind of things could we enable with this technology? So there's a lot of neat things. So the first one, which is not on here, but I have to talk about, is last Friday, Uber actually made an announcement that they're using the cognitive services. Did you guys see that? It was really cool. So it's a neat scenario. So the idea is to enable driver and passenger safety in Ubers. So the scenario is when an Uber driver gets into his car, occasionally he's asked to log in using a selfie. So he takes a selfie of himself, and then that gets sent back to the face verification to show that this is, in fact, the proper driver. And so that protects the driver because then he is able to make sure that no one else is fraudulently trying to use his account. And then it protects the passenger because then we know that this is the person that was verified by Uber to be driving you around and not just, hey, maybe my brother can go drive for me for a little while or something like that. So it's kind of a win-win both ways. So they're leveraging right now the cognitive services and just made an announcement about it last Friday. So I thought that was kind of a neat scenario for driver verification. Some other examples that are out there. So one of the things that's enabled in the Vision APIs is emotion detection. So think about trying to do usability testing with your products. How awesome is it to be able to have someone, you know, using your new software, and then you can kind of capture in real time, here's where they were surprised by something, or here's where they were not so happy or kind of grimacing at the screen, and here's where they were delighted even, would be a lovely thing when people are delighted by your software. So thinking about those kind of things and getting that real-time feedback and seeing where in the experience they are and being able to programmatically map that is really neat. Sentiment analysis, of course, is a great use case. Mining Twitter data, you have a product launch or something and you want to see what are people saying about what we're building. That's a really good thing. And then another fun scenario. So this was a scenario that was actually dreamed up by my teammate. So I have to give Daniel and Doug and that team credit for this. But they had a really neat scenario around a nightclub. So I, of course, know nothing about this because I spent my college years in the library like a good girl. But apparently, in nightclubs, one of the things that really matters to them is the male to female ratio. This helps with business. And so one of the things that they can potentially do is, as you know, people are coming in the door and such, you can kind of just get a quick look at, you know, count of males and count of females, and then be able to balance that appropriately. And then another neat thing you could do in addition to that, if you wanted to, is a lot of nightclubs have banned users, somebody who causes a bit of a ruckus. Yeah, I use the word ruckus. That's why I wasn't in nightclubs, probably. So someone who causes, you know, commotion or something and gets thrown out of the nightclub may be asked to not return. And so if that face was in a list of banned users, then we know, right, when someone's coming in the door, oh, you're not supposed to be in here, and kindly ask them to leave. Or you could flip that that scenario around, and maybe there are VIP users, or thinking about scenarios like a casino or something. Perhaps there are people that are doing, you know, spending a lot of money or something like that, that deserve like the VIP treatment, and so you want to handle that accordingly too. So there's a lot of neat things you could do with gender detection and facial detection and some of those things, identification as well. And then the last couple scenarios on here, language understanding. I'm going to dive into that in depth in a little bit, but something called LUIS, the Language Understanding Intelligence Service, is amazing. And then there's even the scenario of using OCR, or object character recognition, to enable a blind person to read a menu. How many of you guys saw the Seeing AI video at Build? Oh my gosh, I might have to show that at the end if there's time, because it is, okay, I might have to show that, because that's a really good, it's a really neat example of some of the amazing things you can do with the cognitive services. If not, YouTube it later. Just search for Seeing AI, but we'll try to show it at the end. Okay, so let's look at some code real quick. Is this really as simple as you're saying, Jen? So here's just a quick look of calling the Vision API. So what this one is doing is you send it a picture, and then what you get back is the ability, is a description, or will you automatically tag this picture for me? So in this case, what we're doing, if you look here, is I have this visual feature set, and I'm saying, okay, specifically, the information that I want about the picture is, can you give me tags? So just annotate it, tag the data with, you know, some little blocks of text that tell me what the picture is about. And then can you give me a description as well? And a description is more like a caption. So can you give me a quick, like, one line on what the picture has? And so then all I need to do is open a file stream of that actual picture that I'm using, and then pass in the features that I want, and then what I get back, and then what that actually translates to, by the way, so this is the SDK, what that actually translates to is just a post message where we're calling the cognitive services and specifically requesting the features description and tags, and then what we get back is a JSON payload that looks a little something like this, where I have some tags, and you can see we've tagged this picture specifically with outdoor. We can tell it's an outdoor picture, and we've tagged it with bird. We've recognized a bird in the photo, those types of things. And then we have confidence levels around those as well. And then, so we have our tags here, and then there's a caption as well that this has been labeled as a partridge in a pear tree. So very, very nice kind of tags as well as descriptions that you can get back on your various images. So that's one example of the computer vision API. So let's jump into Vision specifically. All right, so here's some examples of things that we have with the Vision API. We have that computer vision that we saw where we're doing I'm calling out with an image and I'm getting back information about a photo. I can also use that same kind of information, send a photo and get back information about facial data as well as emotions. So let's take a quick look at some of that data that you can actually receive from those APIs. So what you get with the image API, we have there's a number of things like emotion, as well as so we have emotion detection, we have facial recognition, and other things like that. So there's some really neat kind of gotchas about the API. So let me tell you about that for 1 second. One thing is the APIs, so when you're working with the face API specifically, you can send it an image. The upper bounds, here's a fun gotcha, is 64 images or 64 faces it can find. So if you send a picture of your wedding where everyone you know is in one picture up there and you're like, what happened to person number 65? That person is probably got caught. So upper limit is 65 there. And then there's a lot of cool things. The emotion API recognizes 8 different emotions. So one of them is a neutral face, and then it also recognizes a number of other things. So the place that you want to go to learn more about all these things is Microsoft.com/WAC/cognitive. This is our the Uber site for everything. And so what you can do is go to this APIs, And then under APIs, let's go to computer vision to start. So with the computer vision API, there's a lot of different things you can do, but let me just show you some examples. So I'm just going to stick with analyzing an image, but there's also a bunch of stuff on celebrities, recognizing celebrities, and some neat video analysis, and OCR, reading text within images, and generating thumbnails. So there's all this other stuff too. So I'm just focusing on one tiny part of the computer vision API. And so you can see here the kind of things that you can do. So here's an example of a picture that we sent, which is a man swimming in water. And again, here's the kind of things that we could request to get back. Remember, in that earlier example, we were requesting a description and tags. So here we have our nice caption, a man swimming in a pool of water. Very good. And then we have a number of tags as well, water, sports, swimming, et cetera. And then there's a number of other different things in here as well. So specifically, it gives information on whether something is clip art or not. And there's actually an enumeration around clip art, which is kind of neat. It gives whether something is a line drawing. So this is an example here of a line drawing, this lion below. It tells you whether it's in black and white. It actually does some stuff around adult content, whether something is adult content or if it's racy. So the example, the difference between those, in case you're wondering, is that adult content is what you think it is. And racy content is maybe a woman in a bathing suit, which is, you know, border, you know, not bad in its, you know, you get it, it's racy. Okay, so so just something to think about. And so actually a lot of people have actually used the image APIs when you're doing any kind of processing of images and then putting them out there automatically, being able to run those quickly through that API to just say, okay, if I'm, you know, accepting images from users and then maybe putting on my website or something, or a live Twitter feed for my conference or something like that, where it's, you don't want to put up anything too bad, there's one example of something you could do in there. And it also finds dominant background colors and accent colors and some neat stuff that you could probably do there to, you know, make borders and such if you wanted to around the images. So that's the image API. Let me jump over to the facial one real quick. So I'm just going back here to face APIs. And I will hit that. And then with the face APIs, if I use facial detection, you can see, so in this case, we're sending this image right here of this woman. And what we get back, all this JSON, is we get an actual face ID that is hold on to just for a limited amount of time if you're trying to compare faces against a lot of people. And see if you can recognize similar people. So we have a face ID. We have the face rectangle, which is the bounding box around the face, which you can see in the image. We have 27 different facial landmarks. So there's various points that are used to kind of map out a face, and those 27 points are all defined right here, as well as various facial attributes. So there's age here, so the fact that it's looks approximately 23 and a half, she's a female. There's some head pose information that gives you kind of a 3D pitch, roll, and yaw for how your head is situated. There's a smile category to see how certain we are and how bright that smile is. There's facial hair, so those are all turning up zero for her. And then there's glasses. And glasses, this is a fun fact, you guys. Glasses is actually an enumeration between reading glasses, no glasses, sunglasses, yeah, and goggles. So swim goggles. It can actually recognize swim goggles as well, which is, you know, awesome. Someone trained on that. So speaking of sunglasses, let me show you a cool app that my teammate made. So this is my teammate Rachel created this really cool bot, which is the deal with it bot. And so she's using the facial recognition API to find in a picture where somebody's, you know, facial coordinates are, and then use like that tilt of the angle, because notice how you only see the bar on the sunglasses for one side, so you can use the way the head is situated to put that bar on the right side. So that looks pretty cool right there. But what's fun is that you can upload your own images. So let me just grab an image right here. I found an image of a lot of people. And so let's grab that real quick and throw that on there. And what we can see now is, watch it, don't miss it. Ooh, see how they all landed at the same time? They went different speeds, so everybody got their shades at the same time. Pretty fun, right? So the thing that's cool about this, so besides, you know, the fun math that you got to do to, like, make it the angles go right and have them land, you know, right on the right place on your face, All of this is available on GitHub. So Rachel published all of her stuff. So if you look here at the bottom, this source on GitHub, you can go and download this code and do this yourself. And just aifunclub.azurewebsites.net, you can upload your own pictures. And I have wasted way too much time playing with this because it is a lot of fun. All right. And then I would be absolutely remiss if I didn't mention the Intelligent Kiosk app. This is an amazing app that shows a lot of cool stuff with facial recognition, with your age and gender detection, with emotions. You can do some fun emotion stuff. So that's available at our booth at the Ignite Expo. So come on over and you can mess around with it a little bit, and there's a lot of really cool stuff in there. So come check that out at some point during the conference. All right, so next we have speech. So let's take a quick look at speech. So speech does a lot of the things that you would expect it to. So the Bing Search API supports text-to-speech, it supports speech-to-text, all of that. There's also a neat speaker recognition API. So if I have, you know, data on, let me put in, you know, little like a monologues from all the characters in Star Wars or something, and then be able to send a new, you know, audio clip from Star Wars, and it could tell me what character it was, something like that. So really kind of fun stuff there. And then there's also CRIS, the Custom Recognition Intelligence Service. And this is a similar to Lewis, what we're going to talk about a little later, but what it does is it enables this for speech. So essentially you can train your own speech models you know, with the things that are specific to your company or, you know, your domain. So, for example, at Microsoft, we throw around a lot of three-letter acronyms that nobody else understands. And so just having a conversation and recognizing what we're saying, you might want to custom build some of the things based on all the things that we say. And I'm sure that all different domains have different kind of lingo. And so this allows you to custom train for voice exactly what you want to do. So let's do a super quick demo for speech. So I'm going to jump back here to the Cognitive Services page. And I am going to go over to the APIs and now jump to speech. So let's actually just jump right to the speaker recognition. And I'm going to go down here to the speaker identification. Now, this is fun. This is the example of I have a bunch of speakers, and I want to be able to identify who someone is. And so what we've done for this model is we've taken 5 US presidents and uploaded, I think, all of their various speeches that they've made, all right, and then trained a model based on that to identify the various presidents. And so now what I'm going to do is actually play an audio clip of one of these presidents, and then it'll pop up right here who it thinks this speaker is. So let's see how it's going.
We gather because we have chosen hope over fear.
And it recognized Barack Obama was the speaker. All right, let's try this one. Next one.
Americans are called to enact this promise in our lives.
And that was George W. Bush.
And though our nation has some...
And then this one.
Today, a generation raised in the shadows of the Cold War...
And Bill Clinton,
assumes new responsibilities.
All right, so really, really cool. And if you look here at the JSON of what we're actually getting back, you can see we have some time data, but the processing result, all it's doing is throwing back a profile ID. So I don't necessarily have to train it that this is Bill Clinton. I'm just telling it, here are five different voice signatures. It's keeping a GUID for those voice signatures, and they can hand me back one. So you can do this all in a way to support privacy as well. Okay, so that is a very, very fast look at speech. There's so much other cool stuff in there, but I'm just want to be cognizant of your time. Okay, so we just saw this. Let's jump now to the next thing, which is language. So there is so many cool things in here. I wish I had time to dive into more of these because these are really cool. So spell checking obviously does what you think it does. It gives you spell check. You send it up and send it back. Linguistic analysis, that's actually kind of fun. It does like part of speech processing. So some really neat stuff in there. But the ones I really want to focus on are Lewis, the Language Understanding Intelligence Service, and then the Text Analytics API. So those two in particular can do some really neat things. So text analytics has kind of 4 major functions it can perform. The first one is doing sentiment analysis. And so what you do is you send it a block of text. So we're working with text now, not speech. So I send it some text, and then it will give me back a number between 0 and 1 for how positive the language is. So 0 would be something very negative, 1 would be something very, very positive. Then we also have key phrase extraction. So can you give me what are the main points that I'm talking about? Again, you pass it up a block of text, get back, here are the main things that this text was about. The next thing is topic detection. So for topic detection specifically, you need to send it a lot of data, so a bigger quantity of data. And then what it does is use clustering techniques to extract those key topics out of there. And imagine turning this loose on your support logs, right? I mean, that's pretty cool. What are the things that people are most upset about? What are people calling in about? Like, that's really relevant and I think a kind of really great business case. And then finally, there's language detection. So if I have a block of text, send it up, tell me, you know, what language was that? Did that come back in? So send some language that was Portuguese. Okay, awesome. Now, and then for the rest of these, I know we serve a global audience, and so I know people are wondering, you know, what languages are we supporting? So currently, sentiment analysis has support for 4 different languages. Key phrase extraction has support for 4 as well, but there are different 4. And then topic detection is English only right now. So again, if you want to see this in your language or you have some strong business case, please come talk to us. And then again, cognitive.uservoice.com, upvote. Find what you want and upvote it and let us know so we can best serve you guys. All right, so let's take a quick look at some of these things. The first thing I want to do, I'm going to just start this running, and then let me run over here to new you. And I'm going to do, let's go to the text analytics demo. So this is an example of some of the things that the text analytics demo gives back to me. So let me just put in some text here, and we can see the things that it gives us back. So let's see. My hotel was lovely. The food was amazing, and the service was fabulous. All right. So let's see how that comes out. Hopefully positive. All right, cool. So here are the things that we can get back from the text analytics. So first of all, language. So it was able to detect that that was English, and it had 100% confidence that that was English. So very, very high confidence that that was indeed English. And then key phrases. Note how it pulled out the things that I was actually talking about there. It saw hotel. You were talking about a hotel, food, and the service. Right, that is exactly what I was talking about. And then the sentiment value, 97%. All right, so it saw this is a very, very positive feedback. So wonderful. All right, so that's just a quick look at text analytics. And then, let's see, this may be playing with fire here, but I gotta go for it. I wanna show you, there's a demo that myself and a teammate of mine, James, created together at a hackathon. And what we were trying to build, I know this sounds like a somewhat lofty goal, but one of the things we take really seriously at Microsoft is this idea of unconscious bias, like just being aware of, you know, am I treating anybody differently for various reasons? You know, the obvious ones are gender and race and ethnicity and sexual orientation and those sort of things. But there's also a lot more subtle things like remote workers calling in versus someone that's actually in the office with you, or introverts and extroverts and a lot of other things. And so even something as easy as if I'm a manager and I have a meeting with one of my direct reports at 10 a.m. when I am in a great mood and I've just had my coffee and I'm relaxed and I still have the whole day ahead of me versus the direct report I meet with at 4 p.m. when my kids are getting off the bus in like 45 minutes and I'm thinking about all the things that I didn't get done that day and I'm just a little bit more impatient with everybody, right? So just thinking about, just thinking about, okay, the whole problem with unconscious bias is that it's unconscious, so it's hard to know that you're actually doing it. So I kept thinking, like, what if we could apply data to that, right? We have this awesome sentiment analysis, so could we apply data to see, you know, what we're doing there? And so the idea, what we did here is we're actually leveraging the Office 365 graph APIs. And so we're reaching into someone's email or reaching into your own email to see the emails that you sent to a certain person and see how well you're, or how positive versus negative you are. So let me show you that real quick. So I'm gonna start by, I'm actually gonna use my manager, which is a little dangerous. My manager is David Washington. So I'm gonna say, let's find out some information about him. And then what it's doing is it's trying to connect to my email. So it's saying, okay, I need credentials to connect to your email. And so for anyone normal, you guys would just put in username, password, and you'd be done. But we have two-factor authentication, so because we're super secure. So it's going to take one additional second where we go here, we sign in with the username and password. I almost said my password out loud right there. I'm glad I didn't. And so what it's doing right now is it's reaching out to my, well, it's actually doing the auth first, but then it will reach out to my email and grab the last 10 emails that I sent to that particular person. So in this case, the last 10 things that I sent to my manager. And I actually have some logic in there to do some smartness about, like, if it was a long email thread where I said something and then he said something and then I said something and he said something, it just grabs the last unique thing that I sent to him so that it isn't, excuse me, I'm getting a call. So let me just get my password in here. Okay. Awesome. So then what I do is I'm getting just those unique things that I'm sending to him, so I know it's just my bias towards him. Then all of that goes up to the cognitive services and then comes back, and then you can see, and I used a free control in here because it was hackathon, and one of the things you can see is that overall, I'm pretty nice to my manager, right? I'm pretty positive. I'm a pretty good person. We got about 72% here. So it looks like I was having a bad day here. And here. So one of the things that's kind of neat is we tried to plot it over time so that way you could see, okay, is this something that's kind of a pattern here, or is it something that maybe that you see consistently, or is it just like kind of a couple flukes that drop down? And actually it's kind of looking not so great on the end there. So I'll have to go check my last couple emails to him and see what we were talking about. So some neat stuff. You guys are welcome. James and I put this code out on GitHub, so if you guys want to play with it too, it's actually kind of fun to like put in different people's names and see what they come back with. So you're welcome to play with this as well if you choose. The code is on GitHub, and the URL is right here. You can go to aka.ms/whackbias, and that will point you to a blog post that has a link to the GitHub and a description. All right. So now let's move on to LUIS, the Language Understanding Intelligence Service. So LUIS is just an amazing thing. So one of the things I've been really into lately with machine learning is bots. This whole concept of, you know, natural language bots that we can interact with. If any of you guys use Cortana or Siri or Alexa or OK Google, you can see that bots are just becoming more of a prevalent part in our life. And so with LUIS, it enables you to use natural language to interact with someone in an easier way. So let me kind of take a step back and tell you how you do this. So first of all, let's say I want to have, let's say it's a travel bot, for example. I want a travel bot that can book a flight for me, it can cancel a flight, and maybe it can check me in for my flight. All right, so like three things. So what we would call those three things are intents. So I have these intents, and so one intent might be to book a flight. And then within that intent, there may be several different things that I need to book a flight. So for example, the departure city to the arrival city, and the departure date and the return date. And the thing that's nice is you can map these intents to this, or these entities to this intent, and then if I try to say something like, I want to go to Paris, it could say, okay, you didn't give me a departure date and return date, so it could say something like, okay, what day do you want to leave? And then we could kind of use natural language to fill out the rest of these things. So I start by defining these entities and this intent. Then I just map a few utterances to an intent. And what I mean by utterances is just natural language expressions of how I would ask for that thing. So for example, I want to go to Paris from September 25th to September 29th, or book me a flight from DTW to Charles de Gaulle, et cetera, et cetera, on these particular dates. And so then I have natural language kind of mapped to these intents. And then this is where the LUIS model actually gets trained. So you give it all that information, you can train it, and now what I can do is send additional natural language queries to that model, and what LUIS returns is the intent that it thinks it is, right? So it's using language fuzzing and things like that to say, you know, if I asked, for example, I need to fly to Paris, for example, it could be able to say, okay, I think that fits into this bucket, and this is a book a flight intent. And so it gives me back that intent, and then I can take that and maybe give a canned answer or whatever I want to do here. So all of that is pretty amazing in itself, but then here's where it gets even better. Do you guys remember at the keynote talking about that human in the loop concept, right, to help assist our learning? So you can actually help your model improve over time based on real feedback from your users. This is the awesome part. So let me actually just show you an example real quick. I'm going to show you some code. This is another thing that I wrote at a different hackathon, actually. Where I am, so I'm going to do Microsoft career, this guy. And then let me also grab Lewis and sign into that first. All right. I'm sorry, you guys, I had these all set up so they would be nice and easy. All right. So, okay, so here's one cool thing, too. So I'm going to tell you about the Microsoft career bot. What's really neat about these Lewis models, too, is that you can export them. So imagine, you know, you're building this thing up in the cloud, whatever. What's really, really nice is when you can hit export, and it dumps in JSON all of those natural language to intent mappings for you. You can check it into source control. You can, it's goodness. It's real goodness. I like that a lot. Okay, but let's go in and edit it. So what I was trying to do, the problem I was trying to solve here is, I don't know if any of you guys have ever had to have ever worked at a career fair. So I went to the University of Michigan. Go Blue! Any Wolverines? No, okay, oh, one. That's nice, hi. Okay, I went to the University of Michigan and I love it, and so I go back every year and I try to recruit more Wolverines to come work at Microsoft. And so what I did was, working these career fairs, since you guys apparently have never done this before, let me paint you a little picture. You're sitting in a booth. It's really hot. There's huge, 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 huge crowds of people that all want to talk to Microsoft, and you want to give everybody just your full attention, just because they've, you know, maybe they really want this, and so you want to make sure you're really giving them all your attention and giving them a great experience and giving them, you know, giving them their best shot to make a good impression. So like this means a lot to me. It's something I want to do very well at. And I started thinking, like, they always want to ask like just a ton of questions, and but they ask like the same 20 questions over and over again, right? So wouldn't it be cool if we had a way to not only answer some of these simple questions so that everyone was just kind of level set by the time they got to you, and be able to show off some of the cool stuff that we build at Microsoft, like all at once. And so that's why I was like, okay, why don't we build this Microsoft career bot? And I did this together with Amanda Papp, who's a machine learning recruiter as well. So I was like working with recruiting to kind of hopefully build something that recruiting can use. So in this case, what you can do is I can talk to the career bot. Let me actually show you with Lewis for 1 second before this. So here are the intents that I focused on. So the things that I wanted the bot to be able to talk about were benefits. So here are the benefits at Microsoft if you wanted a career here. What are the education or work experience needs? What's the compensation like? How do I prepare for an interview? What is relocation packages? What are the different roles that are available? Visas, locations, like all this different stuff. So we kind of put in a bunch of things that people are commonly asked questions to recruiting. And so every time when you create one of these, like when I create benefits or whatever, I just put in some natural language, an example of someone saying, you know, what are the benefits like at Microsoft? Those types of things. All right, and then what I can do is query my bot. So it's nice when you, I think in bots in general, it's really nice to be able to start with like a nice hi, so you can give it a nice description of, hey, here are the things you can ask me about, just to prompt the user so that they're thinking kind of in the same general idea of things that the bot can answer. So it says, hey, you can ask me about these various things. Okay, great, so let's say something like, do I need a work visa if I'm from New Zealand? And I'm going to spell it right. There we go. All right. So I can ask that question, do I need a work visa? And then it gives me an answer. Oh, all non-U.S. residents require a U.S. work visa, blah, 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 blah. And it gives me all this great information, which is the official response from recruiting on visas. So that's awesome. I got some good information back there. Can I work for Microsoft from Michigan? And then I get an answer about, oh, so we were focusing on machine learning jobs since I was working with a machine learning recruiter. So yes, machine learning work happens at a global level. So here's some of the locations doing it right now. You can search for jobs using this link by location. And then finally, something like, help, I have an interview. Exclamation points. All right. So in that situation, oh, we have listed some interview tips at, you know, this URL. Good luck. Awesome. So that's really nice. All right, so all of that is really cool, right? Because it's using those aren't the exact things that I trained it on, but it kind of figured out using this language fuzzing, okay, I think these map to these intents. And what Lewis actually gives you, let me be clear, I'm sending the user's input, what the user asks me, I'm sending to Lewis, and then I'm having Lewis pass me back the intent, and then I'm just giving essentially a canned response to the intent. All right, so here's our answer on benefits, and here's our answer on relocation, et cetera. And so what's really cool then, so all that is really cool, but what's even cooler is now this Lewis model is sitting at a rest endpoint, right? So real people are hitting my rest endpoint. And so as new data comes in, that's actually logged. And so I can actually use this for suggestions, and it will say, hey, here's some stuff that I saw, and I mapped it to this, but is this really the best answer? And so it's something like, do I get free soda? It's currently mapped to none. It doesn't map it to any of the existing intents. So that tells me that, number one, I could either create a new intent. If enough people are asking about this, maybe that makes sense. Or I can remap it to a different intent if it doesn't make sense. So for example, this tell me about childcare at Microsoft. Maybe that's none. Maybe we should create a new thing specific to childcare. Or maybe we should just map that back to benefits and include a little something on childcare in the benefits answer. Okay? So there's some really neat stuff you can do here to actually help your model improve and learn even better. All right, so that's the power of Lewis. All right, using that human in a loop. And so those were the URLs right there. You're welcome to hit them if you want. All right, and then knowledge. Let's talk about the knowledge APIs a bit. So there's a lot of really good stuff in here. There's very deep knowledge graphs you can utilize. The entity linking service is kind of cool. It can do things like differentiate between Mars, the planet, and Mars, the Roman god. So using some contextual things, which is kind of neat. If you had to look at one thing on this list, though, I would recommend the recommendations API. So that one particularly can do a couple different things. One, it can do the ability to do people who bought this also liked this. So you can get those kind of recommendations. And then it also gives you frequently bought together. So the example of, you know, when you buy this computer, a lot of people buy, you know, these accessories that normally go with the computer, that sort of thing. So it gives you all of those types of things. And that's a really nice a nice API that you can leverage easily. And then finally, there's the search APIs. So the search APIs, a number of different APIs that are powered by Bing, where you can search specifically for images or news, and then programmatically get some of the search data back. So let me give you my favorite example of this is something called the Project Murphy bot. So let me actually go pull him up. So if I grab... try to talk to Murphy here. So here's the last thing that I actually sent to Murphy right here. So here's how Project Murphy works. I can ask something like, what if Scott Hanselman was being chased by an elephant? And so then what it gives me back is it uses the cognitive services to do a search for Scott Hanselman, do a search for, and these are both image searches, by the way, an image search for Scott Hanselman, an image search for being chased by an elephant, and then uses the facial APIs to merge them together. So now we have the random person being chased by an elephant with Scott Hanselman's face on it. So if I blow this up a little bit, let me see if this is still available, actually, since it was when I did it last time. Yeah, we got Scott Hanselman running away from an elephant. All right, but I shouldn't pick on Scott, so let me pick on myself instead, since that's the only nice thing to do. And if you don't have a lot of pictures of yourself out on the internet, you can actually say, what if I, for example, what if I was a Disney princess? Which, you know, the world needs to know. What if I was a Disney princess? And so what it does when you say, what if I, is it asks you for a picture that represents yourself. So you can use Skype's tagging mechanism right here to say, let me get a picture. And I think my headshot is in here somewhere. There we go. Boom. Boom. So I give it a picture of me. And then Skype receives that picture. It holds on to it for only 10 minutes, and then it throws it away. So we're not keeping your data for any longer than it needs to be. And so it takes that image. So now it has me. It searched for Disney Princess. And then here we go. If we look at this one, oh, I am probably the ugliest Aurora there has ever been. Nice. All right. That must be tweeted later because that's really bad. Okay. So that's just a quick look of some of the things you can do with the Bing search APIs. And that's something using Project Murphy. If you want to play with that, that's available online. You can add it to your own Skype. That one's freely available as well. It was created by a quorum and a great group of folks as well at the company. All right. So, oh, you know what I'm going to do? I think I have time, so I am going to show you this. We're going to have fun here. I was worried about time because of the reset, but yes, we worked out. So let me show you one example of kind of bringing everything together using the Seeing AI app. So this is just an amazing story, I think, of using several different parts of the Cognitive Service API together to make a real difference. So let's check it out.
I'm Saqib Sheikh. I lost my sight when I was 7, and shortly after that I went to a school for the blind, and that's where I was introduced to talking computers, and that really opened up a whole new world of opportunities. I joined Microsoft 10 years ago as a software engineer. I love making things which improve people's lives. And one of the things I've always dreamt of since I was at university was this idea of something that could tell you at any moment what's going on around you.
I think it's a man jumping in the air doing a trick on a skateboard.
I teamed up with like-minded engineers to make an app which lets you know who and what is around you. It's based on top of the Microsoft Intelligence APIs, which makes it so much easier to make this kind of thing. The app runs on smartphones, but also on the Pivot Head smart glasses. When you're talking to a bigger group, sometimes you can talk and talk and there's no response and you think, is everyone listening really well? Or are they half asleep? And you never know.
I see two faces, 40-year-old man with a beard looking surprised. 20-year-old woman looking happy.
The app can describe the general age and gender of the people around me and what their emotions are, which is incredible. One of the things that's most useful about the app is the ability to read out text.
Hello, good afternoon. Here's your menu.
Great, thank you. I can use the app on my phone to take a picture of the menu, and it's going to guide me on how to take that correct photo.
Move camera to the bottom right and away from the document.
And then it'll recognize the text. Read me the headings.
I see appetizers, salads, paninis, pizzas, pastas.
Hi. Years ago, this was science fiction. I never thought it would be something that you could actually do. But artificial intelligence is improving at an ever faster rate. And I'm really excited to see where we can take this. As engineers, we're always standing on the shoulders of giants, building on top of what went before. And in this case, we've taken years of research from Microsoft Research to pull this off.
I think it's a young girl throwing an orange frisbee in the park.
For me, it's about taking that far-off dream and building it one step at a time. I think this is just the beginning.
All right, yeah. Yeah. No. Saqib's story, like I think I cried the first 17 times I saw that video. It still gets me every time. And I had the pleasure of meeting Saqib. He was at Build last year. He's based out of the UK, and just an amazing, amazing guy. And so let's kind of review what we saw there, right? The first scenario. So he's wearing these glasses, these smart glasses made by a company called Pivot Head. And what he did is it's capturing like video of everything it sees, and then when he flicks. Like that, you saw him do that little flick when he heard some weird noises, like the person jumping on the skateboard or the girl throwing the frisbee. He was hearing strange noises, so he just did a little flick, and what it did was take a picture, take that image, send it up to the cognitive services, and then get that computer vision back where it would give you that caption, that description of what was going on and what it could see. Then the second scenario was the idea of emotion detection, and that's really hard to be able to not get any feedback from the audience or from you're trying to pitch an idea and not get those context clues on how am I doing, can I adjust to see how people are reacting to this. And so having that emotion API and being able to say, okay, I can see these people are happy, they're excited, they're engaged, they're surprised, like these kind of things are very, very, very compelling, I think. And then finally, the scenario with the menu, being able to read the menu in the restaurant. So that was actually using a neat bit of edge detection. So he put the white menu down on the dark table, and so he was holding the camera phone up, but he doesn't know exactly where to place it to get the right shot. And so what it actually did is the camera actually guides him based on edge detection. It looks for the edges of that camera and then can say, okay, you need to move it up a little, you need to move it back, just based on that math of where the edges should be. So it's really neat. And then he can take the picture and it gets all of the data from the menu on there, and then just uses the OCR again from the computer vision API to be able to do that. So really, really neat scenario and a great example of some of the things you can do using cognitive services. All right, so let's wind up with just a quick look at some things that you might want to know. The pricing is all in there right now. So there's a preview pricing is, so cognitive services are still in preview. All of the pricing information is out there. Because it is preview pricing, it is subject to change. So just keep that in mind. The documentation is available. The documentation is really great. Those little tricks about, you know, here are the file types that are accepted. Here are the maximum number of faces you can do. There's some neat stuff about facial matching. When you are trying to do facial matches, there's like a parameter you can pass in to specify, do I want to match, you know, just different pictures of Jennifer where I want to match on the same person, or do I want to match similar faces? So if you want to build something like, you know, what celebrity do I look most like? You can do match against a database of celebrities and say, okay, this face most resembles that face without them being the same person. So there's parameters to do, enable a variety of scenarios there. So great stuff in the documentation. And then I already showed you the client SDKs and samples there. So it's different SDKs for each one of those cognitive services, but we have a great variety across a lot of different platforms already there and available for people to use today. And then finally, great community. So Stack Overflow, the MSDN forums, a lot of great information there. And then finally, use cognitive.uservoice.com. Let us know like how we can make things even better and what things you guys need to really make a difference. So the big Uber resource, microsoft.com/cognitive. So making these machine learning models very simple and easy for everyone to use. Thank you. I think I have time for a few questions, if anybody has any. You can go to the mics. And then for other ones, do remember that all of the speakers, or most of the speakers, will be available tomorrow afternoon. There's an Ask the Speakers. So if you want to sit down and chat about any scenarios one-on-one, feel free to swing by the Ask the Speakers room tomorrow afternoon. It's in the app where the room is.
Hi.
Yes, sir.
So I have Skype for Business.
Yes.
And are these bots installable on Skype for Business as well as Skype, just the consumer Skype?
Yeah. So Skype for Business is not available currently.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Got it. Thank you.
Yes. Hi. Yes, sir.
Can you hit on really quickly just within an intent within the Lua services? I know you can configure actions. Like, what would the scenario for using an action be?
Yes, so the question was about using an action. So my scenario of the recruiting bot was just a simple conversation back and forth. But imagine it's something like you want to book a flight or anything where you might use a wizard right now where there's a number of steps you need to complete. So you might map some action in Lewis to, I need to actually take that step to book the flight, and then there's an action that actually books a flight or something like that. Maybe that's a series of steps. So there's a number of different things you can do there. If you're also looking at the bot framework and some of the things, there's a great class out there called Formflow. I think that's it. And that's a really, really nice thing to use to kind of set up here are the entities and the things that I need, and it can kind of find the things that you don't need. So nice kind of workflow as well. So check out that class on MSDN if you want to work with those.
Thank you.
Yeah, no problem. Yes.
Hey, Jennifer.
Hi.
Thanks so much for doing this talk. And I saw your earlier talks on using Emotive and the EEG thing. It was really, really cool. Specifically on the bots, right? I'm curious, when you're using these cognitive frameworks on Azure, right? Where do the pictures and audio go? Can you say that I want to use, let's say, a data lake or an HD Insight? How would you go about integrating it? Because I realize that there's some Office 365 integration today and a DirectLine integration as well. But I wanted to understand that a little bit more. What does the entire end-to-end integration look like?
Yeah, so I'm maybe you should chat with me afterwards just so I understand your specific scenario. But in general, when you send data to these APIs, it's all kind of laid out very clearly in the terms of services on cognitive services. So it actually, according to the terms of services, we can use that data to improve, make future improvements to the service. And as machine learning people, you understand, you know, you need data to continue to build models. So right now, by the terms of services, you can use them. Now, that being said, even though that's in the terms of services, we're not actually keeping the data in all cases. There are some services, some of the cognitive services are actually throwing the data out anyway, just because we just don't want it. We take privacy so seriously, but that is subject to change because in the terms of services, we could at some point decide to keep that in the future. So just make sure you're reading the terms of services, and privacy is something extremely important, should be important to you and your customers as well. So we're all trying to work together to figure it out the best way to manage, you know, data and privacy and that. But yeah, good question. Yes.
Hi, Jennifer. I've been hearing a lot about Toronto. How does it play with Louis?
Oh, I'm sorry. Say that one more time.
Toronto, the.
Toronto. Yeah. Am I allowed to talk about Toronto? Somebody tell me. Can I? Am I allowed to talk about that publicly?
If I have to ask,
I shouldn't. Okay. Come talk to me afterwards.
Okay. Oh, I was wondering if I could upload my own pictures.
If you could upload your own pictures, yes, you can, sir. So you can definitely, like, so right now, if you want to just try things out, you can go to the demo sites that I was showing you. So the any of these things right here, you can just, if you just want to just kick the tires and see how well it's performing, you can go, for example, to vision and face and upload, like, the computer vision one and the face one, too. I can upload my own stuff. So there's submit image, but then there's also open image. I can grab something from my own hard drive and pull that up and show, see that working there. So you can see how well it actually performs based on what you're trying to do. Yeah. And then, of course, when you can send whatever you want when you're calling the APIs as a developer. Yes.
Hey, Jennifer. Listen, this is just a complete sidebar comment. If you like that video, I was wondering if you've ever heard of the Bethesda device.
Say that one more time. A what device?
Bethesda.
Bethesda device. I don't believe Bethesda. I have.
All right, look it up.
Okay, I will.
It's about 20 years old.
Okay, awesome. I was about to make a dumb, I wouldn't know because I'm so young joke, but yeah, if you put my data in the age API, you'd know that was a lie. Yes, sir.
Thank you, Jennifer, for the presentation. It's really good. One question about the speech recognition.
Yes.
Can it pull out merged speeches? Like if Bill Clinton and Bush and Obama spoke at the same time, simultaneously, can it differentiate the three speeches?
Great question. So the question is, can it differentiate between multiple things if they're speaking at the same time? I have not tested that scenario, and I don't want to give you a definitive answer until I've tried it myself. If they're overlaid, would that work or not? I don't know. Come find me afterwards. I can find one of the people on that team, and maybe they can give you an answer right now. Otherwise, I can write some code and try it.
Thank you.
We can test it. Yeah. Yeah. Yes. Hello.
Hi. Thank you. This was really interesting. I was wondering, what platform are your algorithms written on, and if we have access to the actual algorithm code if we wanted to adapt it?
Yeah, great question. So I would answer that in a couple of ways. So you don't have access to the actual underlying algorithm code. So a lot of these are written in a variety of different things that we use internally at Microsoft. Some of them are Microsoft internal tools that don't translate well externally. But what you can do if you want to learn more about the algorithms is if you go to, like, for example, let me see if I can find it. I think this one has one. So if you go to, like, computer vision, for example, and then click on documentation, and then please, Jennifer, let your memory be right. Oh, yes, it was. Okay. So here's a list of some of the research papers that were behind the computer vision API. So you can actually go read the research, the academic research, and this will actually give you, they may, I think there's some code maybe in some of these, or at least kind of pseudocode, but the idea of the algorithms is documented in a lot of these things. So all of this is public record, you know, published in academic journals. So you can certainly take a look at that. Now, the other thing you can do, so that's kind of part one of the answer. Part two is there's still the Azure Machine Learning Gallery. So if you're looking to build, like, I want to kind of take some of the models that were created by Microsoft and tweak them and modify them a little to fit my specific scenario. There's a lot of like starter algorithms, or like I think there's a whole predictive analytics one, a predictive maintenance one. I believe Danielle did a talk about that earlier today. So you can take those existing models that we've built and then just tweak them for your needs and, you know, stick your own data in instead of ours, and that works very well too. It may be different per paper. Yeah. Yes, sir.
First of all, great presentation, very informative.
Thank you.
My question is, you had mentioned how Lewis is able to map phrases to the underlying intent that you want to recognize. What about going in reverse, feeding in one of these labels and getting some of the model's internal representations for what phrases might cause that model? Kind of like the, you know, those Google dream composite images fed out of the neural network.
Yeah, so I think you could actually, so I should probably sit down and think this through before I give you an answer, but I think some of that functionality is actually in some of those, the things that I didn't talk about, like some of that knowledge graph APIs. Like there's very similar functionality in being able to break down some of these things, and there's one, the web LM1 does like word breaking and stuff like that in it. So I think you could probably get some of that data like from there. But if you want to come find me afterwards or talk tomorrow or whatever, I'd be happy to make sure we can take care of that scenario.
Great, thank you.
Yeah, no problem.
I'm curious about the speech recognition. How much data is behind? Like, how would you work with some people impressions, other people's impressions, or how does
So the question is, how much data is behind it? I don't even know the answer to all of that, honestly, in different teams. It varies based on whether it's speech or whatever. I don't think we've released the exact numbers. What I can tell you is that we worked really hard to make sure that we had a good, diverse representation. Like, I know they were actively looking across genders and across cultures and stuff. And like with the emotion APIs, they chose those 8 emotions specifically because they were emotions that were expressed the same across various cultures and that sort of thing. So they were actively thinking about that. The other thing too is I think there's less data with children because sometimes the children stuff isn't quite as accurate, and I assume that we just don't have as much data of kids lying around we want to work with. So that's something else to keep in mind. But yeah, I can, if you find me afterwards, you can grab one of the folks from the team and get a little more deep dive on that. All right. Thank you guys so much. If you have any further questions, my blog and such is all right here. Thank you guys so much.